Greetings once again to you, my fellow man. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Glad to have you along for another exciting week. Quite possibly the fastest 1 hour in the history of all broadcast media as we go worldwide to a worldwide audience via the internet, unconstrained by the traditional bounds of the broadcast media. Glad to have you here on the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do take the events of the week and focus them through the lens of original thought. This just across my desk, Michael Jackson's death has been ruled a homicide. That's right. Wait a minute, I misread that. It's a homicide. I apologize. Yes, apparently high levels of propofol, the a drug commonly used to put people under during surgery. Yeah, propofol found in his blood. High levels of propofol have led to suspicion against his personal physician. Shock of all shocks, Michael Jackson had hired himself, a doctor, to administer, drugs to help him go to sleep. Michael had some sleeping problems, apparently. And that's really sad. Now, I got this email. Doug, how do you stop a child molester from molesting more children? Give him a personal doctor with plenty of propofol. That's from Dave out in Los Angeles. I'm not sure who Dave is, and I don't take any responsibility for any of Dave's comments. But I got a little bit of a chuckle out of that. Shocking, shocking news that a man as normal as Michael Jackson could end up so abnormal. All right, let's move on to the more important issues of the day. We have an email from another audience member regarding the death panels that we discussed last week. Yes, Doug, I too am in favor of the death panels. I think everybody 60 or older should have to appear before such a panel to be evaluated. He says, this program, however, should start now, but be limited to 3 years when I turn 60. That's from Russ out in, parts unknown. Because it's email, I don't know where any of these people are. And I don't, maybe they're all crazy. That's why they listen to the show. He says, Doug, also, last week was another great show. Love your music. I love the pretty lady in the background laughing at your stuff. But it sounded like there was someone else in the studio acting like a baby. And Russ doesn't approve of all that. So we'll try to get that taken care of, Russ. Don't worry. We have set mechanisms in place to try to deal with such disruptive behavior. And we'll try to keep that to a minimum. I want to thank God Almighty in heaven above for term limits. Ted Kennedy, who oddly enough I spoke a little bit about in last week's broadcast, if you remember, and I think I may have, possibly, you may have inferred, and I quite possibly may have implied that I was wishing that he would die. That may have been what some of you took away from last week's show, and if that's the case, you're not crazy. That's pretty much what I said, and that's pretty much how I felt. And, you know, many people say don't speak ill of the dead. But like I said, if you spoke ill of them while they're alive, and all of a sudden you're acting like Sarah Palin and John McCain, and you're kissing all up on the guy just because he's, you know, cold and dead and in the ground, and you start thinking about your own mortality, well, I think that makes you pretty hypocritical. So I'm glad Ted Kennedy is dead, and I'm glad that God instituted term limits for tyrants. And Ted Kennedy took it, 77 years old? I think I've got a story in here somewhere in this stack of worthless garbage news. I'm not so happy with the news selections this week. I haven't been happy for quite a while. Maybe it's the news that's not making me happy. Now I remember why I went off the air in the first place a couple years ago. I was getting depressed with the whole scene, just watching everything circle the drain into that sucking vortex into post-American civilization that I saw happening. And it's just continuing at an accelerated pace now. And it just gets depressing. But I will soldier on in the name of whatever it is I'm doing here, the Weekly Worldview. the heartbeat of conservative talk on the internet. Welcome aboard. Dateline Newark, New Jersey, from the Associated Press. A man from the West African nation of Togo has admitted his role in the smuggling of dozens of girls and women who were forced to work at hair braiding salons in New Jersey. Now, I have never been to Togo, but let's assume that Togo is like most other African countries, and it's a cesspool, a godforsaken hellhole, like most of Africa. But to be smuggled into New Jersey, perhaps, could leave one longing for the good old days back in Togo. Let's see here. Prosecutors say that between October of 2002 and September of 2007, at least 20 girls and women were taken from Togo, usually using fraudulent visas, and the girls were forced to work 6 or 7 days a week and turn over all of their earnings to the defendants. Hair braiding salons in New Jersey or Togo. Maybe, I don't know what they do in Togo. Do they farm in Togo? They don't seem to farm much at all in Africa in general. But maybe walking behind an ox in Togo is a lot better than braiding hair in New Jersey. I wouldn't want to do either one, frankly. And I hope this gentleman is punished to the full extent of the law. He should probably end up working in a hair salon in New Jersey. All right. Now, let's go to the war file. Let's see here. This is serious news here, ladies and gentlemen. From the Financial Times over in London, the Bloomberg Wire, the United Arab Emirates has seized a ship carrying North Korean-manufactured munitions, detonators, explosives, and rocket-propelled grenades bound for Iran in violation of the United Nations sanctions, according to diplomats. The UAE says that the ship... Now get this. The ship was owned by an Australian subsidiary of a French company and sailing under a Bahamian flag, and it was carrying 10 containers of arms disguised as oil equipment. U.S. President Barack Obama quickly said that the Iranian government must respond by late September to his request for new talks on curbing its nuclear program. Iran said in July that work is underway on a proposal that may provide the basis for renewed talks. Could you make any sense of that last paragraph at all? Barry Ho says they must respond to his request for talks. They say we've got a proposal that might provide the basis for talks. Meanwhile, these ships... like the one discovered by the United Arab Emirates, they're sort of like cockroaches, in my opinion. If you find one, you can bet that there's a bunch of others slithering about, scattering about, hiding from the light. And so while Barry Ho wants talks and Iran says we're laying the foundation for a proposal that could lead to the negotiation that could bring about some such subsequent talks, therefore, ipso, ergo, and all that... Iran continues to become a more and more dangerous enemy. And so there you have that. That's from the war file. Yes, I know we're not officially at war with Iran yet, but I'm going ahead and I'm filing those in the war file in a preemptive strike here at the Weekly Worldview. Dateline, the Associated Press, Kabul. I'm sorry, not Kabul. Kandahar, Afghanistan. 5 car bombs that detonated simultaneously rocked Afghan's largest southern city this Tuesday past, destroying a construction company office, damaging dozens of nearby buildings. At least 30 people died, 56 wounded. In other violence, a bomb blast killed 4 U.S. troops in southern Afghanistan on that same day. The deaths bring to 41 the number of U.S. troops killed in Afghanistan this month. The second deadliest month in the country since the 01 invasion. Last month, 44 troops died. I think this news is dated. This is from Tuesday. I think that we've broken the record there in Afghanistan this month. I think we're over 44 troops killed just this month, the month of August 2009. This year, according to the Associated Press, has been the deadliest of the war for U.S. troops. At least 172 American forces have died in the Afghan war this year. The U.S. currently has more than 60,000 troops in Afghanistan, with more on the way. And this brings to mind, I wonder where the daily body count has gone since Barry Ho was anointed savior. I remember that when George W. Bush, who I'm not the biggest fan of George W. Bush, everyone who's listened to the broadcast knows that I think George W. Bush could perhaps be the stupidest man to ever be elected president of the United States, and quite possibly the most, let's just say dense. The fellow was fairly dense and not all that bright. He was sort of like a Kennedy. You know, he was getting by on his name, but he didn't really have all that much below the surface, except for the fact that he would gladly stab true right-wingers in the back at every opportunity that he had. But Barry Ho is giving him a significant run for his money, as vying for the title of stupidest man to ever be the president of the United States. Obama, inexplicably, has retreated from Iraq, where we at least had some semblance of a possibility of building some sort of coalition that would last some short period of time and perhaps prevent terrorism for some period of time. He's retreated from Iraq into the quagmire of Afghanistan, where, you know, civilizations longer standing than ours have tried to dominate Afghanistan, and they have failed. And so what does Barry Ho do? Pulls the troops out of Iraq, and instead of heading to Iran, which I thought was the whole point there, we had them surrounded, he's now going to, it's going to be a full court press in Afghanistan. And I just don't know if Barry's up to the job. I don't know if the United States of America, as it is currently positioned, has any possibility of success in Afghanistan. I remember when in the early days of the war, back in 2001, in the winter, when we had first invaded, I was of the impression that the war would last many, 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 many years, and that in the end, it would be just another factor in the ultimate demise of what we knew then as America. Of course, it'll be a small factor, because the larger factors are operating right here within our own country. The larger factors are upon us. We have seen the enemy, so to speak, and they are us. And so we will jump into the domestic tranquility file. And it's a little longer than it has been, but not too long. I just can't do the domestic tranquility file too much anymore because it just drives me crazy. Do I even want to jump into the domestic tranquility file? Is there something else I could talk about that maybe is a little less depressing than the fact that America is being devoured from within by our own materialistic, humanistic tendencies? Our rejection of our Creator, the living God, and His law, and our refusal to submit ourselves to the rulership of His Son. The only man who has our best interest at heart is Jesus Christ of Nazareth. And we seem to have forgotten that. And, well, that doesn't end well. But do I want to jump into domestic tranquility? Do I want to talk about big issues like life and the universe and everything? Or not? I really don't. You know, last night my wife and I are scanning the local news to catch the weather, as we are oft wont to do. And we came across a new weather girl. A new weather girl has appeared on the scene here in Denver, and her name is Jennifer Zeppelin. Jennifer Zeppelin. I had to do a double take. If I'm not mistaken, we're not Zeppelins at one point in early 20th century Europe. Were they not used for weather forecasting? And still to this day, do we not use weather balloons? And the biggest question, if Jennifer ever has a son, will she name him Ted? Yeah, right? Ted Zeppelin. the Weekly Worldview, and I'm Doug McBurney, and we're back. Yes, it has. Now, it hasn't been that long since I rock and rolled, because my wife and I, we went to a rock concert this past week, and I'm willing to admit to everyone on the air that we went and saw Def Leppard, popular British act from the 80s, and Poison, and opened with Cheap Trick. Anyway, the one comment I've got to make about the rock concert was that the headlining act was just too loud. Just too loud. I mean, I could feel the bass as if it were ripping my body in half, and we were probably 20 rows back. It was just too loud. You've seen the t-shirt, "If it's too loud, you're too old." Well, I'm too old. It was just too loud. But a great show. The funniest part of the show, my wife and I are standing there and we're rocking out as CC DeVille is just ripping it up on the fretboard, ripping out a solo, and a 30 to 40 something loser and his loser girlfriend lean over and they try to pass me a doobie, right? Which now that hasn't happened in a long time. Now, I waved the fellow off, you know, and I wasn't going to be too judgmental about the guy, especially since he couldn't hear anything I would have possibly said to him. But anyway, I waved him off, you know, thank you very much, no, thank you, but no thanks. And the funny part is, in front of us, there's four women who look like they work in the customer service department at any large financial institution, but they've got on a bit of their 80s garb. You know, they're 40-something, not unlike most of the crowd. And they're standing there, and they're kind of bebopping along, listening to the music. And the loser, he leans over to them, and he tries to pass them the doobie. And the look that the woman gave him was one of the classic funniest things that I've ever seen in my life. She literally looked at him as if he was a third grader caught with a piece of poop in his hand or something. I mean, she just, as if she were the teacher. She scowled and wrinkled up her nose and was just like, ew, like, dude, are you in ninth grade, man? Anyway, it was pretty funny. It was pretty funny. Boy, but the show was really loud. But I want to give props to Poison for not putting on a semi-pornographic rock and roll show like they have wont to do in the past. I understand that a couple of guys in the band now have kids. And so suddenly they realize that putting up video of strippers during their show is, it's not good for society in general. And hopefully they'll realize that at some point down the road, on Judgment Day, you know, God is going to roll video from their concerts. And he's going to be like, you know, what were you thinking about doing this, you idiots? Because believe it or not, folks, there were people who brought their 10, 11-year-old kids to this show. Let me just say that I would not ever do that. I don't know if there's any kind of concert that I would bring my young children to.
Megadeth.
No, that'd be way... Well, at least Megadeth, they were always political and they were never all that... deviant, as far as I can recall. Not that I don't own a single Megadeth CD, by the way. Now, how did I get off on talking about that? I have important news of the day that I need to get to. Anyway, I know it was the look on that girl's face. That was funny. That was funny stuff. Now let's get to the domestic tranquility file because I want to do this. And this is serious news. Dateline San Mateo, California, from the Associated Press. Prosecutors say a 17-year-old boy who detonated two pipe bombs at a Northern California high school while armed with a chainsaw, a sword, and various explosives will be charged as an adult. He faces various charges, including attempted murder. My, and school is just underway. It could be quite a year in the high schools across America. I thank God that my wife and I have opted for homeschooling. Which, by the way, is not nearly as hard as you might think it is. Of course, our daughter's only in third grade, reads at a sixth grade level, at least according to the public school tests. But if you go by the tests of 100 years ago, she probably reads at a second grade level. But anyway, we're glad that we've opted to homeschool because at least we don't have to worry about her getting shot at school. That's just one more worry that's off the table around our house, and we've got plenty of other worries. Around here, especially since all the little heathen thugs in the neighborhood are back in school, back at the factory, back having their minds twisted and degraded, learning about things that they should have no idea about until they're married, frankly. But homeschooling's not as hard as you might think. There are a lot of great curricula out there, a lot of great books. So one family from our church loaned us some books here at the beginning of the school year so we can kind of take a look at some different things and figure out what we want to use. This is the same family, by the way. I have to give props to this family. They're a homeschooling family from Denver Bible Church. I won't give their names, but they're a large cohort and one of the founding members out at the church. A couple weeks ago, I have their daughter and my daughters. I take them out to the swimming pool because it's their daughter's birthday. And I took them over to the concession stand, and I said, whatever you want. It's your birthday, anything you want. Crackers, chips, popsicles, lollipops, ice cream, soda pop. And the girl stopped me, and she said, soda pop? What do you mean, soda pop? I said, you know, Coke, Pepsi, Mountain Dew. She said, oh, I'm not allowed to have that. And I was stunned. I was stunned. I looked down and I said, Chloe, that's, oh, did I say her name? Oh, well, that's okay. No, as long as we don't give their last name. Anyway, no one will know who they are. Anyway, Chloe said, I'm not allowed to have that. Now, how many of the public school wretches running, spreading mayhem through my neighborhood, how many of them would forego an opportunity to take advantage of someone who doesn't know their house rules to get what they want? Well, I can tell you, out of all the heathen brats running around my neighborhood, every single one of them would have jumped on that soda pop, especially if their mom and dad said, don't, you're not allowed to. Every single one of these little brat thugs would have done it. Anyway, so like I say, we've got plenty of issues just trying to protect our daughters from the influence of the heathens around them. So at least we're not sending them to public school, and we don't have to worry about that. So we're looking at some of these curricula, and one of the books that my daughter has is an American history book. It's from some time in the past, before the current wave of political correctness, and it mentions that in early America, there were white men, black men, and red men. Now, Nicole, her brow furrowed a little bit. She was like, red men? She wasn't familiar with the term red man. She doesn't chew tobacco, and she just wasn't familiar that anyone would be referred to as red man. And so my wife explained to her, she said, you know, remember, no, I'm just kidding. No, she didn't say that. She said they were talking about the peaceful, earth-loving Native Americans who inhabited the land before the racist white men came and raped the land. No, she didn't say that either. She said, you know, red men, American Indians. And then Takako pointed out, well, Nicole, you know, in common parlance, some might refer to me as yellow because I'm Japanese, and your dad's white, so you're half yellow and half white. She said, Dad's not white, Dad's pink. And so, you know, as I look at myself, I'm definitely closer to pink than to white. But anyway, my daughter's very observant. But can you imagine what I was trying to get to with that was the idea that a textbook from school would actually talk about the red man, which, I mean, so you have to go back that far in our history to find quality textbooks. If they don't mention the red man, you need to go back further. Anyway, so Nicole is half yellow, half pink, according to her observation. All right. So how did we... Oh, that's right. We're in the domestic tranquility file. So this kid, by the way, San Mateo, I've been there. It is practically paradise on earth. One of the most expensive cities to live in the country. Just outside the Silicon Valley there, nestled in the suburbs of the Silicon Valley, so to speak. Truly a wonderful place. But their public schools are just like the public schools everywhere else. They're producing demented, sick, self-indulgent, overindulged little heathen monster bombs. So if you're sending your children to public school, You are sinning against your child and against God who created you, and you will face him one day, and you will give an account. So pull your kids out of the public school. If you need help on figuring out homeschool, drop me an email. I'd be glad to be of assistance. It's not that hard. Now back into the domestic tranquility file. Dateline Cheyenne, Wyoming, from the Associated Press. Autopsy results reveal that a 31-year-old Cheyenne woman shot her husband, strangled her 2-year-old son, and then shot and killed herself last month. The Laramie County coroner said that the child died from suffocation and strangulation, and that lidocaine, a numbing agent, had been placed on his face and was present in his blood. The report also showed that Joy Hofer's husband, the child's father, died sometime before the others from a gunshot wound to the back of his head. Authorities have said that Joy Hofer, 28 years old, committed suicide after the killings and left a goodbye note on her computer. That's domestic tranquility in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Dateline Brunswick, Georgia, from the Associated Press. The man who called 911 to report finding 7 people slaughtered in a dingy mobile home on a historic Georgia plantation. That man was arrested on separate drug-related charges. Police say they're not ruling him out as a suspect in the killing. Guy Hines Jr., a 22-year-old man, was arrested late Sunday and charged with illegal possession of prescription drugs and marijuana, tampering with evidence, and making false statements to police. 7 people were found dead, along with 2 wounded survivors, who at last report were still alive. Police said neither the dead nor the injured committed the killings. That's Brunswick, Georgia. And then this story that has shocked the world. I've got a lot of information here, so I'm going to try and just put this together for you. This story blew me away. I'm sure it did you. Philip Garrido. This is from Antioch, California. Philip Garrido arrived Monday at the police office at the University of California, Berkeley, with 2 girls, ages 11 and 15. He announced he wanted to hold a religious event on campus related to a group that he called God's Desire. Well, it turns out, police there at the campus of Berkeley, apparently between drug-induced stupors, they thought there was something suspicious about this guy. Turns out Garrido was a registered sex offender who'd been convicted of rape and kidnapping more than 30 years ago. He was known as Creepy Phil to the kids in his neighborhood. He had a reputation for peculiarity. He rambled nonsensically. He was dismissed as kind of nutty by people in the neighborhood, and he said that God spoke to him through a box. And neighbors were worried enough to call police, but no one knew how bizarre he truly was until last week. And you all know Garrido and his 54-year-old wife Nancy were arrested last week in the kidnapping of J.C. Lee Duggard. Kidnapped her and held her for 18 years. But just a bizarre story. Shocking. Bizarre. Monica Adams, a 33-year-old woman whose mother lives on the same street with Garrido, she had met this creep, and she was watching TV one night, and she noticed that she could look up sex offenders on the internet. So she went online. She found Garrido's name. She says, "We were irate. We told all of our neighbors." She knew children were living with him, but she says she figured he was a registered sex offender who was being checked up on by law enforcement. Am I my brother's keeper? She might have said. Her confidence, according to the Associated Press, was misplaced. Authorities bungled many chances to catch Garrido and rescue JC. In November of 2006, a neighbor called police and described Garrido as a psychotic sex addict who was living with children and had people living in tents in his backyard. A sheriff's deputy talked with Garrido for a half hour on his front porch, but he didn't enter the house or walk into the backyard. Now, this woman had reported that he's a whack job with kids living in tents in his backyard. How does the deputy not at least walk into the backyard? How does he not say, "Well, I know it sounds crazy, but could I take a look around the backyard just to make sure?" It's just bizarre. Anyway, he didn't enter the house. He left warning that the tents, now he could see the tents from the front porch. He left warning that the tents could be in violation of city building codes. And he did not know that Garrido was a convicted sex offender, even though his office had that information. Now, Garrido was 25 years old when he was convicted of a federal kidnapping charge and forcible rape after snatching a 25-year-old woman from a South Lake Tahoe, California parking lot, handcuffing her, tying her down, and holding her in a storage unit in Reno, Nevada, back in November of 1976. In his 1977 federal trial in Reno, Garrido testified that he took four hits of LSD after seizing the woman and that he had used LSD, cocaine, marijuana, and hashish and other drugs since 1968. Hey, I wonder if this guy was at Woodstock. This guy's like a walking advertisement for the results of Woodstock. Yeah, this is an appropriate memorial. It's very appropriate that this came out this week as the 40th anniversary of Woodstock was being celebrated by all the hippie scum in Hollywood and on Madison Avenue in New York. This is an appropriate memorial to what Woodstock was really all about, destroying people's minds, destroying people's morality. And this is just an extreme example of exactly what Woodstock led us to. Do I have more? Do I want to do more? Let's finish up this story. Garrido was sentenced, by the way, in 1977 to 50 years for kidnapping and life in prison for rape, but was granted an early release in August of 1988 for no good reason whatsoever that I can discern from this story. As a parolee, you'll be comforted to know that Garrido wore a global positioning satellite-linked ankle bracelet that tracked his every movement. He met with his parole agent several times each month and was subject to routine surprise home visits and random drug and alcohol tests. The most recent random test was conducted just last month. So just in case you felt like the authorities weren't doing something here to protect us, well, this is what they did. This is what they did. Garrido's own father, by the way, says his son is absolutely out of his mind and traces his problems to a motorcycle accident back when he was younger, and he went from a comical funny boy to someone who fell in with the wrong crowd and started using LSD. Garrido actually showed up last week for a meeting with his parole officer, accompanied by his wife, two girls, and a blonde woman who initially identified herself as Alyssa. In fact, she was J.C. Lee Duggard. During that conversation, investigators say Garrido eventually confessed to the kidnapping. Otherwise, the police might have given him one of those stickers that says that I love the sheriff and sent him home for crying out loud. That's why there is only one way that child molesters, kidnappers, and rapists should be databased, and that is under granite or possibly marble if the family can afford it.
When the children cry, let the lonely try. 'Cause when the children sing, then the new
the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Glad to have you back. And let's close out the domestic tranquility file in Las Vegas, Nevada. That's a tough story, I'll tell you what. Dateline Las Vegas, from the Associated Press, a Nevada jury found two illegal immigrants guilty Friday of capital murder and explosive charges in a bombing in a Las Vegas casino parking lot hot dog stand back in 2007. Bomb maker Porfirio Duarte Herrera of Nicaragua and his friend Omar Rueda Denvers, 33, of Guatemala, were found guilty of killing 24-year-old Villebaldo Dorantes Antonio with a pipe bomb outside the Luxor Hotel Casino. Prosecutors said Duarte Herrera provided the bomb-making expertise and Rueda Denvers supplied a motive. What do you think his motive was in blowing up a guy in his hot dog cart? What was the motive? Any guesses? No guesses? Okay, well, let's see here. His motive was jealousy and revenge against Dorantes Antonio, who was dating Rueda Denvers' ex-girlfriend. That's right, Karen. So again, as so often is the case, cases of murder are rooted in sexual immorality. And this, again, is an extreme example of what happens when one dabbles in sexual immorality, or when there is no moral constraints on society, and men and women are free to use each other and then dump each other and go find someone new. And in fact, that's celebrated in song and in music and in movies. This is the fallout. This is the result. Quite often ends in bloodshed and murder. And by the way, the headline on this story from the Associated Press, the headline says, two immigrants guilty in fatal Vegas strip bombing. As if these guys came across on Ellis Island, for crying out loud. These were a couple of dirtbag scum illegal immigrants. Entered the country illegally, and but then partook in the culture to which they had illegally availed themselves. And that's the state of domestic tranquility out in Las Vegas. All right, now let's move to the international file. Some less depressing news. Let's see here. From London, from the Reuters Wire, the deaths of no fewer than four people after being trampled by cows in the past 2 months has prompted Britain's main farming union to issue a warning about the dangers of provoking the normally docile animals. Cows can become aggressive and charge, especially when calves are present and walkers are accompanied by dogs. Now, the current spate of attacks by cows began on the Pennine Hills, July 21st, when Liz Crowsley, a veterinary surgeon, was crushed against a wall, then trampled underfoot while walking with her two dogs. On July 15th, another attack took place in Derbyshire when Barry Pilgrim, a 65-year-old from the area, was trampled to death by a cow as his wife looked on. Now, 3 days later, Anita Hinchy, a 63-year-old, was out walking her dog near Cardiff when a cow attacked her and trampled her to death. Now, a fourth fatal attack claimed the life of Harold Lee, a 75-year-old farmer. He was killed by his own herd, which may have been nervous, by the siren of a passing ambulance. Now, what's the point to this story? I really don't know. I just found it interesting.
Cows don't like dogs.
I guess that's the takeaway there. Anyway, I just found it interesting that cows have trampled and killed four people in Britain. There's really no other point to the story, I suppose. All right, now let's go on to Kuala Lumpur in the international file. Muslims in Malaysia have been barred from attending a concert by U.S. hip-hop group The Black Eyed Peas. Their concert is being sponsored by Guinness, makers of fine alcoholic beverages worldwide. The move comes after a Malaysian Islamic court sentenced a 32-year-old Muslim woman to be caned after she was caught drinking beer in a hotel. Wow. Now, Muslims, according to Reuters, account for 55% of the 27 million people in the Southeast Asian country of Kuala Lumpur. Muslims are barred from consuming alcohol, although the rules are regularly flouted, especially in big cities like the capital, Kuala Lumpur. That's right. That's the city. The country is Malaysia. I always get these things confused. Let's see. Guinness sells approximately $350 million worth of beer in Malaysia, which is supposedly a dry country. So somebody's flouting the rules. Even without alcohol, foreign brands are subject to scrutiny in Malaysia. Earlier this week, the Pan-Malaysian Islamic Party said it wanted Danish band Michael Learns to Rock banned from performing as it would cause immorality. Since 2007, the Pan-Malaysian Islamic Party, which is the country's second largest political group, has campaigned against performances by the likes of Beyoncé, Rihanna, Gwen Stefani, and Avril Lavigne. So I couldn't argue with that, frankly. And if I was a part of a group that was banned from going to a Black Eyed Peas concert, I don't know that I would feel all that, I don't know that my rights would feel all that trampled, to be honest with you. But what this brings to mind, I want to focus on the fact that this Islamic court sentenced a 32-year-old Muslim woman to be caned after she was caught drinking beer in a hotel. Now, this is the type of thing that any young man who is being subjected to the Islamic religion, at some point, a young person, would have to look at this and say, you know, something's not right here. Here's a woman, a grown woman, 32 years old, drinking a beer in a hotel. Not drunken, not causing an uproar, not doing anything immoral, drinking a beer, and she is caned. Something just doesn't fit. This religion, to me, seems a little bit out of whack. I would hope that young people growing up in Islam at some point would come to a realization that something just doesn't quite fit with this religion. And, you know, Islam is an imitation religion. It's an imitation of true religion, Judaism and Christianity, and it's an imitation then taken too far. You know, they cut off people's hands for stealing. They poke out their eyes for various immoral acts. They cane a woman for drinking a beer at a hotel. It's an imitation, and it's taken too far. It's the devil's favorite religion, by the way. And that brings us to this week's Bible verse. Warning, 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 Real Robinson. There are Bible verses up ahead for those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity. We know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not tolerate anyone who would dare quote a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. Let's see what the Apostle Paul told the Colossians about Christianity. Paul said, "Therefore, if you, Christian, died with Christ from the basic principles of the world, why, as though living in the world, do you subject yourselves to regulations like do not touch, do not taste, do not handle, which all concern things which perish with the using, according to the commandments and doctrines of men? These things indeed have an appearance of wisdom in self-imposed religion, false humility, and neglect of the body, but are of no value against the indulgence of the flesh." Now that's real religion. That's the Apostle Paul. That's real religion. As opposed to the phony baloney satanic Islamic religion where you cane a chick for drinking a beer. That's just outrageous. All right. Well, it felt good to get that Bible verse in. Okay. Now let's close out the international file in Tokyo. Now this is just sad. From the Reuters wire, Tokyo police will try to rein in a wave of shoplifting by lonely elderly people by involving them in community service. One out of four elderly shoplifters in the capital there in Tokyo blame their crime on loneliness. Japanese media quoted a police survey as stating that also that another 8% said it was because they had, quote, no reason to live. More than half of the elderly shoplifters said they had no friends, and 40% of them lived alone. Now, that's just depressing. And, you know, I'm not, normally, if someone steals, I am an advocate of just punishment. You should have to pay restitution, and perhaps a public flogging. I'm not averse to caning, by the way. I'd like to see it used appropriately. And I think that when we look at the old people there in Tokyo,
and the fact that they're shoplifting, 40% of them have no friends, they think they have no reason to live. I think there might be a bigger problem in Japanese culture than the mere wanting of baubles and knickknacks at the local store and shoplifting. Seems like there's an undercurrent of something pretty ugly going on in Japanese culture. By the way, elderly shoplifting cases in Tokyo reached an all-time high last year, nearly catching up with the number of cases involving young offenders. Now, those young offenders, they should be made to pay double, seven times. We could work that out. But also cane. But the old people, I mean, you got an 85-year-old Japanese person, woman, out shoplifting. I mean, you need to sit down and think about what's going on with your what has happened to the old people in Japan, for crying out loud. By the way, people 65 years or older accounted for 23% of the 18,000 shoplifting cases in 2008, more than a doubling in the past 5 years. Over 20% of Japan's population is age 65 or older, with that figure set to double by 2050. Man, I guess you don't want to be opening a 7-Eleven in downtown Tokyo. It's the Weekly Worldview. We're rounding third, heading into home, ladies and gentlemen. Dateline Ashland, Oregon, from the Associated Press, Jamie Anenklaas. Jamie Anenklaas is well-known and well-liked in this storybook town for his longtime support of local theater, his videos of Democratic political events, and being the half-brother to Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. Well, authorities announced this Tuesday past that Anenklaas had been indicted on charges of encouraging child sexual abuse by possessing, duplicating, and disseminating child pornography. Anenklaas, a 62-year-old Democrat, moved from Washington, D.C. to Ashland, Oregon in the 1990s, along with many retirees attracted by the town's Oregon Shakespeare Festival, good restaurants, Southern Oregon University, and liberal attitudes that stand out starkly in a rural region dominated by conservative politics. I'm sure Ashland, Oregon is glad to have a connection to the Kennedys. In related news from the Financial Times, describing himself as heartbroken, President Barry Ho said, quote, "The Kennedy name is synonymous with the Democratic Party." At times, Ted was the target of partisan campaign attacks, but in the United States Senate, I can think of no one who engendered greater respect or affection from members of both sides of the aisle. I'm not going to say that because that... Okay. "Mr. Kennedy's passing," said Barry, "will almost certainly bring to a close the most celebrated political dynasty America has known." Yada, 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 all that. We all know Barry Ho would be kissing up to Teddy Kennedy, but listen to this. Former President George W. Bush said Ted Kennedy was a seminal figure in the United States Senate, a leader who answered a call to duty for some 47 years, and whose death closes a remarkable chapter in that body's history. John McCain, not to be outdone, by the way, who co-authored a failed immigration reform bill with the aforementioned Teddy Kennedy back in 06. You remember that didn't pass. John McCain said, "We will praise as his greatest strength the integrity of his word. When he made a promise, he kept it no matter what."
No kidding.
Unless you were in the back seat of his car and the water was coming through the windows. And then that promise to get you to the ferry was not necessarily operational. Let's see. I thought I had another quote from a well-known Republican. Is that not the case? Here we are. Sarah Palin, everybody's favorite conservative girl, she said of Ted Kennedy, quote, "He believed in our country and fought passionately for his convictions." Well, I guess that's fairly innocuous. She could have mentioned the fact that he killed that girl, though. I mean, to leave that out of any statement regarding Mr. Kennedy is simply to Well, to miss the elephant in the room, so to speak. Dateline Boston, Massachusetts. For decades, Edward Kennedy was considered the most powerful voice in the Senate for gay rights and a strong supporter of AIDS funding, hate crimes legislation, and the ever-popular same-sex marriage. We have a quote here from Chuck Wolf, president of the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund. He said, well, we assume it's a he. The name is Chuck. But he said, having somebody in the Senate who was never afraid to stand up and say, this is the right thing to do, lifted all of our spirits and made all lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered people know that there was hope. Did I mention transgender? Did I leave anyone out? Let's see. Kennedy was also a leading supporter of gay marriage in his home state of Massachusetts, which was the first to legalize same-sex marriage in 2004 under Republican Governor Mitt Romney. Senator Kennedy, according to, let's see, we have another quote here. Joe Solomonese, president of the Human Rights Campaign, he said, Senator Kennedy has more than anyone else been our strongest voice in the United States Senate for the lesbian, gay, bi, and transgendered community. On every piece of legislation, every piece, Senator Kennedy has been the lead. Yeah. David Wilson, one of 14 plaintiffs in a gay marriage lawsuit, said that he viewed Kennedy as, quote, a beacon of hope on gay rights issues. For me, he was the bridge from the civil rights movement in the 60s to the gay rights movement in the 80s. Now here I am, a gay man, and an African-American gay man at that, and I'm looking to that same person for that ray of hope. Well, that was David Wilson. Well, David, your ray of hope has been buried in the ground 6 feet under. He's been term limited. But unfortunately, I think the homosexual agenda and the gay movement overall to destroy the country and our children will move on unabated, in fact, even buoyed by the death of Edward M. Kennedy, since death is really what these people worship, and Ted Kennedy has, in that sense, achieved the apex of achievement in the gay, lesbian, transgendered, bi, translucent community, whatever. Anyway, you know, the community that speaks with all those extra S's. Those folks. One more from the politics file. From Denver, from the Denver Post, one of two people suspected of shattering 11 windows at the state Democratic Party headquarters has an arrest record and a history of helping Democratic political candidate, and there are also rumors that she is also either somehow transgendered or wants to be transgendered or wishes that he or she could be perceived as transgendered. Police said that about 2:20 a.m., 24-year-old Maurice Schwenkler... That's Maurice Schwenkler, took a hammer to the picture windows at Democratic headquarters displaying posters touting President Barry Ho and his health care reform efforts. Democratic Party Chairman Pat Wack said that the damage to her building in Denver's Art District was a consequence of an effort on the other side to stir up hate. She tempered her statement after Democratic operative Schwenkler after his political history was revealed. Then she backed off and she said, listen, what I've been saying is there's a lot of rhetoric out there from both sides of the spectrum. That's been what's disturbing to me. People are saying lots of things not appropriate for civil discourse. I didn't realize that he was a Democrat and a queer, or I would have never implied that it was Republican. Anyway, it's really funny. Pat Wack. Pat Wack is the Democratic Party chairwoman. So she's got a name, Pat. Could be a boy, could be a girl. Pat Wack. Not that there's anything wrong with the name Pat. It's just in this particular situation, I can't help but make fun of everything that I possibly can about everyone involved in this story. Pat Wack, who was not involved with the group that paid Schwenkler back when he was working for the Democrats, she said she's never heard of the guy, and pointed out that just because he canvassed for Democrats doesn't mean he's a good Democrat. I mean, a good Democrat would have got away, okay? And everyone would have thought it was Republicans. This guy's not necessarily a good Democrat. A fairly inept Democrat, as a matter of fact. We'd rather not be associated with him. Okay. Let's see. From the culture file, we don't really have a lot of time, so let's start at the top of the culture file with the big news. Dateline Denver, Colorado. Colorado abortion foes are launching another campaign to amend the state constitution to give legal protection to human embryos. That's right. So, Mr. Drudge, we want to point out that they're not eggs. I remember last election in the 08 campaign when we launched our effort here in Colorado for personhood for living human beings, very small ones, albeit embryos, if you'd like. Drudge put up a headline. Should eggs have civil rights? And I wanted to strangle Matt Drudge because up until then, I thought Matt was on our side. I thought he was pro-life. But Matt Drudge, well, I'm not going to go into what I think about Matt Drudge because I don't want to get sued by the guy, but let's just say that Matt Drudge, at some point in the not-too-distant future, will probably find himself in a fairly uncomfortable situation. Let's just put it that way. Anyway, Drudge, we're not talking about eggs. Supporters said last week that they'll begin collecting signatures to get the new personhood ballot initiative on next year's ballot. The measure is often called a personhood amendment because it grants embryos the legal status of a person. That's right, inalienable rights, the right to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, all that good stuff. Backers say the wording last year may have confused voters like Matt Drudge and led them to visualize chicken eggs. They say the new version will use the term from the beginning of the biological development of that human being. So good news. In fact, we were out collecting signatures. I collected over 150 signatures down at the Colorado State Fair last Friday. And then I got to take my girls on all the fun rides, and we ate some very awful overpriced food and got to witness all the freaks and weirdos. What's the deal with the body piercing now becoming the body stretching? What's the deal with the silver dollar-sized inserts into the earlobes? I'm not sure I get that. Not that I really could really understand sticking a spike through your cheek or your eyelid either. And the whole tongue piercing thing, I never got that either. But anyway, we got to tour the fair and see all the kiddies dressed up like freaks and explain to our daughters, this is what happens when you refuse to subject yourself to the laws of our Creator and the love of Jesus Christ. You become a total freak and you start sticking things into your flesh because you're just whacked out. All right, do we have any other news that's of any interest? Charlie Rangel has apparently hid $500,000. I can't tell from this story. I have a story from the Wall Street Journal. I can't tell if he just hid it from the Congress on his disclosure forms or if he hid it from the IRS. But I suppose we'll find out. Mr. Rangel blamed he had some problems. He failed to report $75,000 in income from a rental villa at the beachfront Punta Cana Yacht Club down in the Dominican Republic. He blamed that on the language barrier because he doesn't speak Spanish. No habla español, so I didn't realize I had to pay taxes on that. There was a problem with the language barrier. Dateline New York City from the Associated Press. New York Governor David Patterson says his comments last week suggesting some of his critics were motivated by racial bias have been misunderstood. Probably because he was black. They didn't have any Bonics interpreter. Anyway, so the Democrats are having some problems, a little bit lost in translation there, but we'll keep working on them. Okay, I want to thank Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, Theology Online, and of course my other brother Daryl who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. And I will be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.